a shared, tired smile. I like the new hair. She pointed to the bleached tangles. What about the music blogs? You still freelancing?
A little. I've cut down on assignments since Madeline got sick.
Right. She uncapped the decanter, refilled her glass. Want some scotch? Doesn't feel right to drink champagne tonight.
It doesn't, but I'll pass on both. I'm too sad to get shit-faced. You might want to take it easy, too. I know it's tempting to drink until you get numb.
Oh, but that's the thing.
I'm numb now. I'm drinking to feel something. I should be bawling my eyes out, hysterical, but...
She waved a hand across her face and blinked rapidly.
Nothing. I'll cry over a paper cut, but not my dying mother. What kind of an asshole am I? Come here.
Kenzie took the glass out of her hand and hugged her. She buried her face in his furry vest, wanting the soft fabric to smother her.
There's no right or wrong way to react to something like this, he said. Not crying doesn't make you an asshole. You're just in shock. The tears will come later. Knowing you, maybe sooner than later.
He gave her a playful nudge. Bobbing her head, eyes vacant, Una stepped back from the hug and took a deep breath. I don't want to know. But she needed to know.
Cancer.
Kenzie nodded.
Lymphoma.
How much time does she have left? Months? Weeks?
Weeks, hopefully.
The two words together were jarring, like a fist slammed against a piano. What was hopeful about living mere weeks?
The best we can do now is help her manage the pain, he said.
Is she in a lot of pain? I should be in pain too. Una wanted to slap, scratch, pinch herself, anything to feel less disconnected.
Madeline is a strong woman, but this disease is a motherfucker. It's wearing her down. We'll want to keep her suffering to a minimum.
What does that mean? We'll feed her a morphine milkshake if the pain becomes too much? Kenzie stared her down, his eyes dark and unflinching.
If we have to, yes. We considered sending her to this resort off the coast of Peru, where some people spend their last days. But Madeline decided she preferred to be close to home. A hospice nurse comes in every day. But it might get to a point where her palliative care falls on us.
Oh. The alcohol had begun its blurring trick, but also made her limbs feel heavy. Well, I'm glad you're still around.
Good, because I'm living here now. Don't worry, I know you like your privacy, and I'll stay out of your way when you want to be alone.
I don't want to be alone. Her mother would be gone so soon. The thought left her on the precipice of a dark chasm. Did I leave myself a letter? Kenzie looked down.
No. You tried writing one a bunch of times, but could never find the right words. So you decided it was better to say nothing and make the most of the time left.
I guess that makes sense. She reached for the bottle of scotch, but set it back down. What can I do?
There's stuff I've been trying to take care of on my own, because it was hard for you. But it's getting hard for me, too. I'll need your help with certain things.
Of course. A dark wave engulfed her. Am I ever a good mother to my son? Is her will up to date?
That's one of the things.
And funeral arrangements.
Yes, but we don't have to get into any of that tonight.
Okay. Tamping down the quiver in her voice, she spoke with calm determination. I'll help you with anything you need. How much had she burdened Kenzie with last year, to say nothing of other years? Last year must have been horrendous. He tipped his head side to side, considering.
The last couple of months weren't so hot. Seeing Madeline get sicker was awful. Then there was the presidential election. Wait until I fill you in on that shit show. And 2016 had some other low points. Losing Bowie, Prince, and Leonard Cohen sucked.
Wait, they're all dead? Her eyebrows shot up.
Yeah, that was a brutal rule of three. But on a personal level, overall, last year was pretty epic. You made sure of that.
He gave her a nod of approval, a flicker of light and warmth that she clung to in the dank darkness. What did I do?
As if I'm gonna tell you. But you did good, Mom. Real good. Now come on. Let's go downstairs for some cake and eclairs.
He tugged on her arm, but she remained immobile, staring at the empty fireplace.
I wish this could be a happier reunion.
If only there was an actual fire sizzling and crackling, even though it wouldn't warm the cold in her bones.
I wish this wasn't going to be a terrible year.
Chapter 29. It was a terrible year. And then it wasn't. The weeks leading up to Madeline's death were dull, oppressive, and downhearted. Every day there was a little less of her as the illness tightened its grip, her abdomen swollen and skin yellow, liver failure making her unable to eat, unable to sleep without heavy sedatives, waking up disoriented in a pool of her own sweat. Una was desperate for her mother to live. But this wasn't living. It was a multi-pronged horror in which she was waiting out the clock on Madeline's suffering, while dreading each minute in case it was the last.
Look at it this way, my dear girl,
Madeline said one evening through parched lips.
You're going to see me again. Maybe even on your next leap. We'll have many more years together. And you won't have to live through my death again. Think of it as getting the worst out of the way.
And what about the years I have left without you? Her voice a raspy whisper.
They'll be peppered in with the years you do have me. It'll be easier in some ways. If you were living a normal person's chronology, I'd be out of your life forever. At least you'll be able to look forward to seeing me again. And when I'm not here, you'll have Kenzie.
But rarely both together. How bitterly unfair. Una jerked her head side to side, tried to shake out some tears, but her eyes remained dry. As if sensing her troubling thoughts, Madeline added,
All three of us have had some marvelous years together, too. Last year in particular.
Her racking cough provided the perfect dramatic pause. Taking a hasty drink of water, she continued.
Why? It was nothing short of glorious. We saw and experienced more in a matter of months than many do in a lifetime.
She held up a finger as a spasm of pain coursed through her. Do you need more morphine? Una's face echoed a different pain.
Not right now.
After a moment, her body relaxed.
Last year, you must have known about my impending diagnosis, because you insisted we not waste a single moment. And we didn't. No spoilers, but...
A mischievous gleam still shone through her fading eyes.
Let's just say, the only thing left on my bucket list is the figurative bucket.
Her wink made Una want to fall to her knees.
Please don't go crossing that off yet, Mom. There are some things I still need to say.
She'd had days to string together a tribute, and though it would never do her mother justice, there wasn't much time left to vocalize it. Imperfect was better than unspoken.
You know how Dad always called you a force of nature? Well, I saw you more as a force of chaos. Growing up, you did these little disruptive things that drove me crazy.
like how I'd comb my hair until it was perfect, and you'd come and tousle it. Or how you brought me orange tennis shoes after I asked for plain white ones. And after Dad died, when the last thing I needed was more chaos, you still brought it, making me cut class, ride roller coasters, go to concerts. But I get it now. You weren't adding chaos to my life. You were adding color. What would a world without Madeline possibly look like? Una could conjure only a gray canvas. A wave of cold exhaustion swept over her, but she continued. That's the amazing thing about you. How sneaky your wisdom is, and how quiet your sacrifice is. You've done so much to put me first. I'm sorry I took that for granted. And I'm sorry for the times I pushed you away or acted like there was nothing I could learn from you. I actually learned a lot. You taught me to be brave and curious, to make mistakes, to be my boldest and truest self, to find a path through this tangled-up life of mine, and thank you for everything. Una had to stop. Her words, though heartfelt, were beginning to resemble a eulogy, which she'd have to write soon enough. Such grim, unavoidable homework awaiting her. When Madeline fell asleep, Una checked to make sure she was still breathing. Faintly, but she was. Then asked Kenzie to join her in the study. "Could we sit?" She motioned to the plum-colored armchairs across from the fireplace. "I swear, every year the chairs in here are different." "Yeah, you do swap them out a lot. You say you can't seem to get them right." "If only it was just the chairs." A dark chuckle. "But I do like these." She settled into the plush cushioning. "So listen."
Uh-oh. You have your "we need to talk about Kenzie" face.
Elbows on knees, he leaned forward. "More like, we need to talk about my shitty mom skills. My last leap was 1999.
"Did you party like Prince told you to? Laugh at all the Y2K? Oh, 1999.
His smirk evaporated.
"Yeah, that was rough.
I didn't know I had a kid before that leap." She clasped her hands as if in prayer. "What happened in Boston? It was such a crazy thing to do. But I wanted to see you so badly. I couldn't think of a better way to do it without causing more disruption."
"And you would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for that pesky gazpacho,"
he said in a cartoony old man voice. Her earnestness interrupted. She sat back. "You've heard all this from me before."
"Yeah. And we're cool."
A breezy wave of his hand.
"I'm not cool. I'm so sorry for lying to you, for damaging your relationship with Shivani and Faye."
"It took a hit, but we moved past it. You and I did too, eventually. Though, you have to admit, what you did, that undercover boss bullshit, was pretty messed up. But we've reached a point where we can even laugh about it now."
Una couldn't imagine laughing about that, or much of anything, right then.
"You're not a shitty mom," he said.
"When that whole showdown happened, it took a while for it to sink in. I thought there was no way this goth chick with the cool music taste actually gave birth to me.
And yet. How peculiar to see her smirk reflected in a young man she hadn't even become pregnant with in her timeline. A man older than her externally than she was internally.
"You must have thought I was a deadbeat. Or mentally ill." "Kinda. And that's before I found out about the time travel. Which, spoiler alert, Madeline filled me in on."
Her brow puckered, then smoothed out. Was that in 2003?
Yeah.
Kenzie's face grew somber. I've always wondered about the night of that Suzanne Vega show. Chronologically, I thought you were meeting me for the first time, so that's why I pretended not to know you. But if you already knew who I was, why go along with my act? Her hands orbited each other, urging him to fill in the blanks. A hissing sigh preceded his response.
I was out of my head when when Faye and Shivani died. Madeline stayed with me for a while, helped me get their affairs in order, then convinced me to return to Brooklyn with her.
Silence as he shifted in his seat, crossed one leg over a knee, then the other.
She tried to get me to see you, tried to explain your leaps. But I wasn't ready to deal with that, not on top of everything else. So she tried a different tactic. Suggested I take her concert ticket, pretend I didn't know you. Said I could feel out the situation and leave if I wasn't comfortable.
Wow. The fog thinned and another obscured corner of her life became visible. So that was the first time you'd seen me since the Boston incident. No wonder you could barely look at me. Shock flashed across her face. I just realized something.
Uh-oh.
The first time I met you, she counted off on her fingers. In 2015, you pretended you weren't my son. The second time, in 2003, we both pretended not to know each other. The third time, I pretended I wasn't your mother. This is the first leap where neither of us are pretending. They shook their heads in sync, a web of perplexity and tenderness strung between them. The following morning, Madeline passed away. Kenzie found her in bed. He didn't want Una to see the body, but she insisted. Mom made me look at Dad's body again before he was buried. She said I needed to do it for closure, so my brain truly registered that he was gone. In a weird way, it helped. When she saw her mother, Una didn't outwardly react. Madeline was gaunt and waxy, but her closed eyes looked as if they could still open and glint with traces of life. Seeing her this way resolved nothing, helped nothing. Una remained in a catatonic state of agony, like a surgery patient whose anesthesia had worn off mid-operation, paralyzed, cut open. They made funeral arrangements. Madeline Lockhart was scheduled for burial in a Queens cemetery on a Thursday, though the services would be held in Coney Island. That morning, the funeral home called. When Una picked up the phone, her heart jackhammered, believing for a second it was because there'd been a mistake, that Madeline was still alive. But they called only because Una had forgotten to provide them with a pair of her mother's shoes for the burial, which had to be messengered over.
Are you ready?
In the mirror, her eyes were glossed over. Somewhere else. Dale's basement. That fateful New Year's Eve. An indulgent dose of nostalgia, but a necessary reminder. Look at how much joy you are capable of. Any respite was allowable today. Any barricade against the encroaching gloom.
The Uber's gonna be here in 10 minutes. Mom?
Kenzie asked from her bedroom doorway. Her gaze shifted over to her son standing in the threshold. Come in. I'm almost ready.
That's a great color on you.
Thanks. One of Madeline's final requests was that nobody wear black to her funeral. White was fine, but brighter pigments were encouraged. So Una had gone out and purchased a purple wool dress. Probably not as vibrant as her mother would have liked. Kenzie's fuchsia suit would have garnered higher approval, but it was the best she could do. Could you help me with this? She held out the gold necklace made from clockwork parts Madeline had given her. After he helped her fasten it, Una screwed her eyes shut and took a deep breath.
I can't do it. It's the worst. But you can't miss your mother's funeral. Not the funeral. The eulogy.
She went to her purse and took out a folded up piece of paper.
I've written and rewritten the thing a dozen times. But when I think about standing up there and reading it out loud.
Though still dry-eyed, her breathing quickened, became jagged.
Shh, it's okay. Calm down.
He put a hand on her back.
I'll give the eulogy for you. It's too much to ask.
But her eyes begged for a contradiction.
It's not too much. I got this.
He pocketed the paper. His mercy made it easier for her to breathe, even as guilt crept in.
You're an amazing kid. Stronger than me. Nah, I'm just more mature than you this year. You have no idea how much you'll kick ass in later leaps. Now come on, Mom. We need to go.
Before she died, Madeline had given Una a cheat sheet of extended family and friends they'd spent time with in recent years. But when the strangers began their parade before her in the funeral home that smelled of musty lavender, Una failed to recall a single name. The mourners took her blank silence for grief and offered tentative hugs, pats on the shoulder, and versions of the same scripted condolences. So many iterations of, I'm sorry, and my deepest sympathies, and if there's anything I can do. She gritted her teeth and waited out the generic kindness. Though she wouldn't have to deliver the eulogy herself, Una still worried that seeing Kenzie at the podium would end her drought of tears and bring about a messy emotional display. But her written words didn't make her cry, nor did seeing other mourners weep, not even her son. She didn't cry at all that day. Why wouldn't the sadness overcome her? Sad would have been familiar. Sad would have been easier. This was more like being mummified in an arid, airless room. All she heard was a faint ringing in her ears, and all she felt was a tingle in the tips of her fingers. Days later, Una was heating up Chinese leftovers on a glass plate in the microwave. When she took the plate out, it slipped from her fingers and crashed to the floor. The glass shattered, lo mein noodles and sesame chicken scattering. She dropped to her knees and bawled, skinny arms around her, Kenzie shushing her as she rocked back and forth. No use crying over spilled lo mein. She paused her wailing. Terrible joke. Yeah, it is. We used to call that fae funny.
We?
Oh. She frowned. You mean you and Shivani? A quieter, thoughtful grief came over her.
I'm sorry. Last year you were fine with me talking about.
No, it is fine for you to talk about them. She wiped her nose with the back of her hand.
I was just thinking. I lost my dad, but I still had my mom right there. I can't imagine what it would have been like losing both of them at once.
It sucked a hell of a lot.
A grim nod.
But I had Madeline. And you. Even if I did take some time to come around. You both helped me through it. And I'll help you through this.
But what about you? You lost your grandmother. I'm crying into Chinese food, wondering how many leaps it'll be before I get to see her again, but you. He looked away and cleared his throat.
I'll be fine. I've still got you, right?
Goddamn right you do. They got to their feet. Now let's clean up this mess. You grab the paper towels and I'll get a sponge. As they tidied the floor, Kenzie said,
Can I tell you something weird?
Always.
I know your whole time travel condition has fucked up your life, but sometimes I'm jealous of it. Sometimes I wish I inherited it from you, even a little bit.
Una paused, wet sponge in midair. Really? Is it so you could see them again? Shivani and Faye?
That's part of it, sure. And also, I don't know. when you're experiencing time and order. There's probably so much you take for granted. But when you go from year to year randomly, I bet you see things differently. Notice more. Appreciate more.
Yeah, you'd think so. But sometimes you're too busy dealing with what a pain in the ass it is. Notice more. Appreciate more. Damn, how did I end up with such a wise kid? Not that she could take too much credit, if anything. It was another reminder of the excruciating decision she'd have to make after he was born.
No doubt it's a pain. But you also get to look forward. Or is it backward? To these other moments in your life that are gone for the rest of us.
A wistful smile.
And once in a while you get to be young again. Youth isn't wasted on you.
Oh, I've had my share of wasted youth. And come on, you're only in your 30s. You're too young to be sounding like such an old man.
Though, I'm still in my 20s, so technically you're older than me.
Wow. Mom was right, this does get confusing. She switched on the faucet to rinse out the sponge. Trust me, you have nothing to be jealous about.
You obviously haven't lived through your European 80s adventure then.
I haven't lived through most of the 80s yet. Wait. Off the water went as she abruptly turned around. What kind of European 80s adventure? Is it with Dale?
Shit.
Gnawing his lower lip, he shook his head.
I'm not supposed to tell you. Please don't make me say anything else.
It's okay, I won't. Because he'd already said enough, and she no longer wanted to shield herself from tragedy. Which meant, yes, a flood of horrendous feelings awaited her. Sorrow, guilt, regret. But it also meant letting her love for Kenzie buoy her. It meant being present for him this year. It meant being hopeful about the years to come. As the months went by, Una and Kenzie muddled through. Their grief was ever present, but lessened by degrees. Despite routines and distractions, Una and her son often felt Madeline's absence, as if the color and volume on the world had been turned down a notch. They mourned her in the moments when they turned to each other with heavy-hearted smiles that said, "Madeline would have loved this." Like when they came across a tiny East Village shop selling Indian and Tibetan textiles and trinkets. Or when they caught a TV documentary about the history of flight attendants. Or when they saw a 6-foot inflatable bottle of champagne while passing by the grand opening of a liquor store. So many things Madeline would have loved. The loss of her mother made for a bittersweet reunion with Kenzie. A balancing act of enjoying his company while accepting his inevitable absence from her life, depending on what year awaited her next leap. One morning in late October, while they sat on a log in the park feeding the ducks and geese, Una turned to Kenzie and said, "I haven't lived through being pregnant and giving birth to you yet, but do you ever wish I hadn't given you up for adoption?"
"That's not a fair question."
He plucked bits off a loaf of bread and let them fall at his feet.
"It's not fair to you, or to Faye and Shivani. Because I love having you in my life, but I also loved having them in my life.
But losing them so young, what if I could spare you that pain?" Noting his suspicious scowl, she hurried to add, "Not by keeping you from them. I saw what a happy family the three of you were. I'm talking about the accident. I've tried to change certain parts of the future, but I've never been able to. Maybe I didn't try hard enough. Mom couldn't prevent the accident, but there has to be another way."
"No."
"But what if it would give you more time with Faye and Shivani? Even if that means less time with me. What if it could mean a better life for you?"
"Mom, you need to stop."
He faced her with a stubborn jut to his chin.
Of course, I wish the accident never happened. After they died, there were times I would have killed for just one more day with them.
Una opened her mouth to retort.
Hang on. You need to let me finish. Every time we have this conversation, you try to talk over me.
Chastened, she chewed her lip and nodded an apology.
You have no idea how tempting it is when you start talking about this. How my brain goes crazy wondering if maybe this time you would be able to change the future, or send me off into a happier, parallel timeline or whatever.
He pointed his palms to the sky.
But there's no way to know what the cost would be. Would other people die in their place? Or if it would guarantee a happier life? Maybe I've seen too many movies where that kind of thing goes horribly wrong. Or maybe I've just accepted things as they are. I just wish you would too, Mom. You have to stop trying to mess with your fate. Or at least mine. You need to let the bad shit happen and stop trying to undo it. What went down with you and me in Boston? Faye and Shivani's accident? Let it all be.
Are you sure? Always this nagging remorse that she'd made the wrong choices, took the wrong turns in the maze of her life.
I'm sure.
He put a hand on her arm and softened his voice.
I have an awesome life. Yes, I've lost some good people, and I'm a little aimless. I'm 33, single, still figuring out what I want to be when I grow up, still living with my mother. But I'm okay with that. And it's up to me to change anything I'm not okay with.
Fair enough. A slow nod. I hope your aimlessness isn't my fault. When I was with Dale, he had such a clear vision for our lives, which I admired because I never had a path like that mapped out for myself. But then I was selected for that year abroad and suddenly had two paths to choose from, and then, just as suddenly, none.
She watched two ducks fighting over a crust in the shallow end of the water.
I'm sorry you didn't get to know your father. Not something you had any control over.
A heavy shrug.
Hey, do you think he would have had a problem with me being gay?
God, no. But he definitely would have had a problem with you being a Pink Floyd fan.
Kenzie laughed and Una joined in.
So, are you doing okay these days?
He asked. Fine, I guess. Why, what's up?
I was thinking of taking a trip.
Oh? Where to?
New Zealand.
What's in New Zealand?
Reading the glimmer in his eyes, she amended the question.
Who's in New Zealand?
I've been chatting with this guy online the last few months.
A sheep farmer? Lord of the Rings tour guide?
Mom.
But he held back another laugh even as he admonished her.
He's a tech guy. Web analytics.
Tell me all about him.
His name is David.
As Kenzie recounted their digital courtship, Una's heart gave a little squeeze at the joy splashed across his face. Was this how she looked in the early days when she told Madeline about Dale, or Crosby, or Edward? Had her mother experienced the same surge of elation mixed with trepidation? Elation, because how beautiful to see your child's heart soar. Trepidation, because how delicate the flight, how easy to crash.
I think he's a good guy, Mom. And I've always wanted to visit New Zealand.
Well, don't let me stop you.
When his smile faltered, she said,
No, really. You should go.
I'll be fine here.
Una forced a breezy tone.
I was actually thinking of going on my own trip.
She wasn't. Maybe I'll take a cruise around the Greek islands. She wouldn't.
You sure you don't want to do New Zealand with me?
But it was a hollow invitation. Maybe some other time.
It'll only be for a few weeks.
Get a one-way ticket just in case. Maybe things will go well with David, and you'll want to stay longer.
She thought of exploring Egyptian tombs and markets with Edward, the added enchantment of falling in love in a foreign country. Hopefully, Kenzie's romantic luck would exceed hers. But better not to think of sour endings or impending loneliness. Kenzie did end up staying longer in New Zealand. 2 months, during which Una continued her routines, feeling both suspended in and fleeting through time. Sleep often eluded her, as did hunger. She'd begun the year thinner than she was in her first leap and continued to lose weight. But it was born out of grief, not health consciousness. No Madeline plus no Kenzie equaled no appetite. To distract herself from all the absence, she studied her financial binder, memorizing every page. Pragmatic but wishful thinking that the next leap would take her to an earlier year. She also found volunteer work at an animal shelter and a library. Dogs and books, two excellent defenses against solitude and despair. In early December, she received a package from New Zealand, a small blue ceramic bird with a red beak. The attached note read,
"This is a pukeko, one of NZ's native birds. It's reluctant to fly and tends to run and hide when it's disturbed. But when it does fly, it can cover great distances. Sound familiar? I thought it would make a good addition to your tchotchke menagerie. XO, Kenzie."
She added the ceramic bird to the display case in her bedroom. It held numerous knickknacks still missing their origin stories. The Fabergé egg, the Venetian mask, the glass igloo, many others. There was no telling when her collection would be fully known to her, or when it would be complete. But each year was another blank page filled. Finally, her son sent word he was coming back to New York for Christmas. His flight would get in Saturday afternoon, and that morning she worked her final volunteer shift at the library. On her way out, in the hallway, she heard guitar strumming and followed it to a room with its door ajar, open far enough to reveal a circle of kids sitting around a middle-aged Asian man playing the opening bars of Pink Floyd's "Wish You Were Here." Gray at the temples, wearier behind the eyes, but his face filled with warm recognition when he saw Una in the doorway. Peter Hahn. They hadn't crossed paths since their last guitar lesson. "You caught me at a bad time," he'd said. "And now?" He sang the entire song over the heads of the children straight at her. And when he got to the line about lost souls swimming in a fishbowl, she grinned even as a few sneaky tears slid down her face. Because it was nice to feel less lost and alone, even for a moment. Because, of course, this would happen right at the end of the year. After the song, he excused himself and went over to Una. "What? No Radiohead?" she asked.
"Oh, you got here late and missed No Surprises."
Hair a little thinner, but it still fell into his eyes the same way, and he flicked it aside the same way.
"You sing about suicide to little kids?" "Eh, I focus more on the lyrics about pretty houses and gardens than carbon monoxide."
"And I see you've gotten over your stage fright," she said.
"Playing for 8-year-olds is different."
A quirk of his mouth.
"It's good to see you, Una. Really good. It's been what?"
"It doesn't matter how long it's been. It's just stupid time."
"Stupid time," he said, as if casting an insult, then snickered.
Was she smiling too much? If she was, then so was he.
"Can I take you to lunch?"
A sweet bashfulness in his question. "Yes," the word out of her mouth before she glanced at the wall clock behind him.
"Wait, no, I can't. I have to leave for the airport in a half hour. I could do a quick coffee. Let me just grab my guitar."
They went to a cafe around the corner with exposed brick and a chalkboard proclaiming all tips were donated to a women's shelter. Peter paid for their coffee,
but when he wasn't looking, Una slipped a $100 bill into the tip jar. Once they were settled at a corner table, hot beverages untouched before them. At first, all they could do was stare at each other. Tentative. A gossamer anticipation strung between them like fairy lights. The noise of customers and jangly Christmas music receded into the background, like the hush in a dark theater before the show begins. They tilted their heads, hesitated, then both spoke at once.
So how long have you been playing for kids?
So what time is your flight?
They laughed, paused, and when neither moved to answer, they both did at the same time.
I was just filling in for a friend.
I'm just picking someone up. More laughter. It was okay. They'd have time to get their rhythm right.
I thought maybe you were also a volunteer,
Una said.
Because it would make perfect sense for us to spend all this time in the same building but never run into each other until my last day there.
Come on, don't have such a low opinion of fate. That was actually the first time I'd even set foot in that library. But you know, I did see you a couple of years ago in Prospect Park.
Peter took a long sip of coffee, eyebrows raised as if reliving the surprising moment.
I would have said hello, but you were having this intense conversation with someone. A guy.
Did he happen to be young and handsome, with cool Tilda Swinton hair? Her smile mysterious, dreamy.
I think so.
Yeah, that was Kenzie, my kid. That's who I'm picking up at the airport. Had Peter seen her during her very first leap? How awkward it would have been if he'd approached them, only for her to have no idea who he was.
I didn't know you had a child.
Neither did I. It's a long, complicated story.
Is it now?
His eyes flashed, playful, ready to accept a challenge. His fingers made a slow path along the table, stopped in the center.
Funny, because you never struck me as the least bit complicated.
Yeah, neither did you. Not even a little. She slid her hand forward until it was just shy of his. There had always been an invisible wall between them. But now he flipped his palm up, and the wall became an open door. The only thing left to do was walk through it. So Una crossed the threshold and slid her hand into his. He gave one soft squeeze, a greeting. Welcome home.
I gotta admit, it killed me a little when you stopped your lessons. Don't get me wrong, I understand why. Can you even imagine how awkward it would have been if I kept coming? It makes me cringe just thinking about it. I would have endured that awkwardness if it meant seeing you. Any day.
Even if it made things with your girlfriend weird?
Oh, you mean the woman I ended up marrying and having three kids with?
Before Una could pull her hand away, he grinned.
Kidding. We broke up after a couple of months. I wanted to call you, but I didn't want to be that guy. I also had this sense, I don't know, like I needed to wait. Like things had to play out a certain way.
Everything has its time. She quoted his tattoo.
Exactly. I'm just glad we're sitting here right now.
Me too. She kept her eyes fixed on their clasped hands. So rarely does a fulfilled wish live up to the anticipation of it, and even exceed it. It's too bad I need to leave so soon.
Maybe we could get dinner sometime?
I'd love to. She looked up at him. But it can't be until after the new year. Any disappointment smoothed over with an understanding nod.
Of course. I'm sure you have a lot going on for the holidays, with your son.
That's part of it. But also, I want to give 2018 Una something to look forward to. He tapped a finger to his chin, weighed the statement.
Then I guess 2018 Peter will also have something to look forward to.
When the year ended, she wouldn't be ready to go. But the clock would have no sympathy. Her next leap would always hover on the horizon, unavoidable, waiting to whisk her away. In some cases, waiting to grant a wish from years ago. Part 9. All Tomorrow's Parties. 1983. 1926. Chapter 30.
Happy New Year!
Warm lips pressed against Una's, and firm arms wrapped around her as the room erupted in celebratory shrieks. Eyes closed, she returned the kiss and tightened her arms around a man who'd always felt like home. Eyes closed, in case it wasn't really true, in case it was a figment. I need to be sure. Una opened her eyes. She was back in Dale's basement, back in the mirrored room, surrounded by her motley group of friends. A small television across the way showed Times Square ushering in 1983, while all around her, people popped streamers and created a cacophony with noisemakers and their own hooting. This better not be a dream. It wasn't. 7 years of disorientation and strange navigation. 7 years of wandering and wondering. 7 long years until she returned. Una stepped back, and there he was. Dale. His smile lopsided, his big brown eyes full of all the love in the world. She glanced down at her sequin dress and leather jacket, then back up at him.
It really happened.
A flood of joy, so acute it hurt.
I'm really back. You're back.
She held a hand an inch away from his face, scared to touch him in case he dissipated before her.
What's the matter with you?
Dale cocked his head. But it wasn't a mirage. His hand against her cheek said he wasn't going to disappear, at least not tonight. Barely able to keep her head above water as vacillating emotions threatened to drown her, she threw her arms around him and buried her face in his neck.
It's you. It's finally you.
He pulled back and squinted at her.
Are you okay? Did you have too much champagne?
A wild laugh.
No, I'm fine. I'm great. So thrilled to see you. You have no idea.
I've been here all night. You make it sound like it's been years or something.
7 years.
Sorry to interrupt your sickening lovey-dovey moment, but I need to borrow this man for a minute.
Wayne tugged on Dale's sleeve and jerked his head upstairs. Una took in her friend's jerry-curled hair, red leather getup, and fingerless gloves, and she laughed again.
What are you grinning at, Missy?
Just 80s fashion is the best.
Any idea what's gotten into this one?
Wayne asked Dale.
I'm trying to figure that out myself. Clearly the girl isn't drinking enough.
A soft elbow to her side and a wink.
Why don't you have another while we take care of something upstairs?
Una nodded, too choked up to speak. But she wouldn't take his advice, because she wanted to remember the rest of this night relatively sober. The partygoer swayed to the mid-tempo synths of a Yaz song, and even Pam did a cautious two-step to the music. As if sensing she was being watched, she looked over at Una, who gave her a sad smile. I promise I'll visit you in London. A moment later, the music was cut off, the basement lights dimmed, and Dale and Wayne came downstairs with an ice cream cake lit up with 20 candles, 19 plus one to grow on. The room burst into a rendition of Happy Birthday. The cake was decorated with music notes, her name spelled out beneath it in blue icing. Una couldn't hold back any longer. The tears came so thick and fast, they extinguished two of the candles before she blew the rest out. Everyone around her cheered and the lights came back on.
Did you make a wish?
Dale put an arm around her waist. Yes, though it'll never come true. Wayne whisked away the cake to cut pieces for everyone.
I've got one more surprise for you.
Wiggling his eyebrows, Dale held out a tiny box wrapped in silver paper. Inside was a gold chain holding a miniature hourglass pendant.
That's real sand in there, too,
he said. Several galaxies worth, I bet. It's lovely, breathed Una.
We had the best summer,
he whispered as he helped her fasten the clasp. This summer will be even better. She sneaked a peek at the inside of her wrist, but of course, no tattoo. What would happen to the necklace in the coming years? Why didn't she have it later in life? Later could wait. Come here. She pulled him close, inhaled his cologne and hair gel, mixed with the smell of her new leather jacket. What'll happen to Dale's jacket after he dies? Will he be buried in it? Another lump formed in her throat, but she swallowed it down. This line of thinking was no good. She had to cast aside the future's certainties. Getting pregnant in the late summer, giving birth to a son Dale wouldn't live to see the following spring. She had to pretend she didn't know what would happen next year. It was the only way she'd enjoy this one. Suppressing tears and sighs and future wisdom, Una wrapped her arms around Dale's neck and kissed him hard on the mouth, oblivious to the whistles and hollers around her. The kiss opened a gulf of bright light inside her. She'd lost count of all the men she'd kissed in the last 7 years, but none came close to Dale D'Amico. None kissed her back with such transcendent passion. Maybe Peter Hahn would, but that was for future Una to determine. And still the sorrow threatened at the edges like a tidal wave on the horizon. How could she keep it from engulfing her? Corey came over.
Hey, so should we go ahead and tune up?
In the corner of the room, a wooden platform had been erected as a makeshift stage. On it were Corey's drums, Una's Yamaha keyboard, and a couple of amps, which propped up Dale's guitar and Wayne's bass. Shit, she said under her breath. There was no way she could play. It had been years since she touched a keyboard. Una's mouth went dry. I need to call a band meeting. Could we go outside for a minute? Corey, Wayne, and Dale exchanged curious looks but followed her to the backyard. The air was so cold it singed the inside of her nostrils. I have a couple of announcements to make. First of all, I'm going to drop out of school to spend as much time with the band as possible. And you. She pointed to Dale, but held him back when he moved toward her. Hold on. You might not like this second part as much. Big breath in. Out. I hate playing the keyboard. I've been taking guitar lessons, and I've gotten good. I'm going to keep playing the guitar no matter what. And I'd like to stay in the band. But I never want to touch that Yamaha again. Corey and Wayne exchanged a wide-eyed look. Each took a step back.
You've been secretly taking guitar lessons?
Dale stood with his arms folded, eyebrows up, mouth turned down. I couldn't tell you right away. I didn't even know if I'd be any good. You've always been so adamant about me playing keys and...
I was adamant because the band needed a keyboardist, not a second guitarist.
The confusion in Dale's eyes turned to pleading, for the woman before him to transform back into the one he'd known mere moments ago. Lots of great bands have two guitarists. Talking Heads, The Rolling Stones, Velvet Underground. Radiohead has three guitarists.
Who the hell is Radiohead?
Dale glanced at the other two guys, who shrugged and stepped farther away. Just some... You wouldn't... It doesn't matter, Una stammered. The point is, we can make two guitars work. And if we need to, we can find a new keyboardist.
None of this makes any sense.
He walked in tight circles around the yard.
You say you're quitting school to be with me, be with the band. But you learned a new instrument behind my back? What else are you hiding from me?
Plenty, she wanted to say, but she merely shrugged. I still want to be in the band. Maybe you should ask the other guys what they think. At the very least, you should hear me play. I'm a good guitarist. Better than you, but I've had years more practice.
Factory 12 asked us to tour with them based on our sound, which has keys. I don't know if they'll want us without them. I don't know what our sound will be like now.
Dale stopped pacing and examined her face closely.
I can't put my finger on it, but you're different.
Early adulthood is a formative period in a person's life.
See? Even the way you're talking right now. It's not like you.
It is me. The real me. Corey stepped back into the circle.
Hey, since we're changing things up, can we also change our name? What's wrong with early dawning?
Dale asked, hands up in exasperation. A reluctant forward shuffle from Wayne.
I hate to say it, but everything.
Brow furrowed and jaw set, Dale braced for an argument. But when he caught Una's eye, his face softened. As much as I love the Velvet Underground reference, I'm not crazy about early dawning as a band name either, she said. But we could still find something with a nod to the Velvets. How about Candy Says?
I don't know. Do we have to be so obvious about our influences?
Wayne lit a cigarette and blew smoke above their heads.
What if we mix it up a little more? How about Strangers with Candy? Or just Stranger Candy?
The four of them stood a little straighter, a new hum of energy running through them. Una's ears buzzed with the echo of something Kenzie had mentioned in 1999, about a European 80s one-hit wonder. Wasn't her name Candy Stranger?
Stranger Candy,
murmured Dale, his face full of fire and mischief. You're already picturing the marquee, aren't you? Una knocked her shoulder against him.
I think we all are.
Corey chewed his thumbnail, nodded.
So you think Madeline is gonna mind you dropping out of school?
Mom. Mom is alive. Another hard swallow and, I think she'll be fine with it. Hell, she'll probably ask to be our tour manager. Wayne stubbed his cigarette out on the heel of his boot.
Can we go back inside now? It's freezing out here.
Lagging behind, Una grabbed Dale's sleeve to hold him back. We'll follow you guys in a minute. When they were alone in the yard, he gave her a nervous look.
Any more bombshells?
Nothing bad. You know how we plan to go to Europe this summer? After the tour?
Don't tell me you changed your mind about that, too.
No way, I still want to go. But I want to stay longer. I think we should stay the rest of the year. Work odd jobs along the way if we need to. But we won't need to, because in March, Kreisa will win the Florida Derby, paying out 85-1 odds.
And what about the band? If the Factory 12 tour goes well, we should use the money to cut a better demo, follow up with our own tour.
The band will still be there.
Europe will still be there,
Dale said, following her logic. You won't be here. She wished she could tell him enough to convince him that nothing would ever come of the band regardless of their name, that he should enjoy his last days because he had only 14 months worth of them left. We won't get another shot at Europe, Una insisted. It may sound morbid, but this is our one chance to go. Taking both of his hands in hers, she begged him with her eyes, with her skin, with her mouth against his. Dale's side of the kiss asked many questions, but hers offered no answers, only that he had to trust her. When they broke apart, he half smiled and let out a long, decisive sigh.
We'll find a way to get to Europe.
Una moved in for another kiss, but he put out an arm.
I'm still figuring out how this band is going to sound with no keys and two guitarists. If it doesn't work, we'll need to find a new keyboardist. So there'll be five of us. And I can't make any promises about Europe beyond the summer. Let's see how the tour goes.
Let's see how the tour goes, she agreed. Even though the band wouldn't make any significant mark on the world of music, she'd have the year to experience the high that comes from creating and playing songs. And even though Dale would die young, it wouldn't be this year. And she'd cherish every moment with him,
cultivate memories she'd savor during any lonely days to come. Beyond that, she couldn't know what the rest of the year had in store, to say nothing of subsequent ones. The future had shown her previews of what lay ahead, but there were always surprises mixed in with the spoilers. Glimpses, but not the full picture. And whether she went by her internal age of 26 or her external age of 19, she was still young, and she had decades of living to do, even if it was out of order. Una would always try to create continuity and meaning in her life. She couldn't help it. But she'd also seize these moments of happiness and relish them. Whichever way the years flowed, it was impossible to outmaneuver their passage. Even chronology doesn't guarantee security. All good things ended. Always. The trick was to enjoy them while they lasted. Una was still learning. Every time she leaped, no matter the year, someone important would be absent from her life. Dale, or Madeline, or Kenzie. Every year bittersweet. But that was okay. There would be bad days. There always would. But she'd collect these good days, each one illuminated, and string them together until they glowed brightly in her memory like Christmas lights in a mirrored room.
How about we go back inside, and you show off your guitar skills for us? I bet you're impressive.
Dale winked as he held the door open for her. And maybe youth isn't wasted on the young. Maybe the young know how to spend their youth just right. It was going to be a glorious year.
This is Brittany Presley. We hope you've enjoyed Una Out of Order, a Macmillan audio production from Flatiron Books. This title was produced by Katie Robitsky. Text copyright 2020 by Margarita Montemore. Production copyright 2020 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.